all of the idolatry and the enemies of being able to abandon yourself, the molten images, all of that, all of your little idols of weights that you think things should be, their emotional content, and how you judge life by its emotional, by your emotional response to it. The root cause of all of these activities is fear. And the idea of fear is most of the time you don't really like to talk about fear. Fear is something that a lot of times you admit sort of little fears. But fear is at the root of all idolatry. And it's at the root of all of your attempts at self-seeking. Because of the basic one singular lie. The one lie, the one deception that you and the entire earth is under, is that you and the entire peoples of the earth are somehow separate from the source of life. And this is nothing new. I've talked about this to you many, many times. But it's amazing to me, as the deeper we go into this and the more we see people on the hot seat, how much the common denominator of fear is the controlling point of your lives. There are common fears or communal fears that are common to all of humanity. And then there are the fears that are connected to your own country. And then there are fears that are connected to your own arena, your own family, your own, and then there are private fears. And so in the course of the process of sanctification, of the sanctification becoming complete, sanctification simply means that you're totally and completely set apart. What it is, in a very real sense, is a process of dissolving fear. I don't know if you can relate to what I'm talking about, but and forgetting the natural for a minute, as a spiritual child, you have a certain set of fears. And those fears include, oh my God, is this doctrine right? Oh wow, sometimes I don't even think there's a God. What's going to happen to me? It's all of the fears connected with you as an isolated self. And then as you go into from the standpoint of what they call a spiritual adolescent state, your fears are back in the same place that the fears of the Gentiles or the fears of the rest of the world, except that you don't have any protection. And the fears that the rest of the world has, you have all kinds of systematic protections for either the avoidance of thinking about the fears or avenues of placating the fears that are communal. And most of those avenues of placating fear, by definition, have to produce confederacies or alliances with those around you. In other words, you're less afraid if you're not alone. And so the problem in the spiritual adolescent state is that you still have these confederacies and you always look for alliances. But the numbers of alliances that are available to you are far less than they used to be when you were in the world. And you think, oh shit, this is worse than I've ever been. Let me go back to Egypt, and let me go back to the world, and leave me alone, God. Anybody can relate to that? But God's, and he tried. But God becomes a burning fire within your innermost being, and he won't let you alone. You're chased by the hounds of heaven in the silence of your own being. And so then when you finally see that there can be no alliances externally, then you try to make alliances inward. I mean, in terms of in the body, or among common believers. And the alliances that are made there almost always go in the name of friendship. Sometimes they go in the name of marriage. Sometimes they go in the name of fellowship. But the root cause, all you're trying to do is to create alliances to placate your fear. Understand? A lot of these are subconscious. You are attracted to people with common idolatry. And so I've noticed little cliques forming, or little dealies, or little friendships among the body, and it's always common idolatry. I mean, you're a hunk of protoplasm, right? You're just a hunk of stuff. And so you have all these things that you call friendship and love. Nice. But what all that hunk of protoplasm is doing is running around trying to escape fear. And it tries to escape fear by forming alliances. So, what we're about with regard to the high place is to expose your fears. But more importantly, from a communal standpoint, in terms of us as a body of believers, in order to break those holes, we have to destroy alliances and confederacies. And to talk in terms of not allowing you to feed each other's idolatry in the name of exhortation or in the name of friendship. You understand? There's no such thing as friendship. I mean, as Adam knows it, as the man. By definition, a friend, if you believe the spiritual definition, a friend, first of all, you must know everything there is to know and be on a totally and completely common path towards a common objective. That's the only time Jesus ever called anybody a friend. He said, you've been servants, but now you are friends because I've told you all things of my Father. And so, again, friendship in the world is simply protection. From fear. Love in the world is simply common neuroses. Sex in the world is just masturbation by proxy. You understand what I'm talking about? But all of them, I want you to understand the depth at which the world is lying in deception. And I want you to understand that my role is to destroy all your alliances with the value systems of the world or with each other, even in the marriages, until the point comes that you are without fear. Perfected love has cast out all fear. Perfected means perfect love has cast out all fear. Perfect is the Greek word teleos, and it means fully tested. There's no more little bullshit, no more little small talk, no more little posturing, no more little game playing. But for the first time, you become a real being. without fear. And God will pull really sneaky stuff on you. You'll be laying in bed and a cockroach will run over you. Or worse yet, you'll be lying in bed and a rat will come up. Or you'll be lying in bed and a snake will come around. So that you will come to a point, and the promise and the inheritance and your rightful position is that even sudden fear shall not come upon you. So you will walk totally and completely without fear of any kind. That's what all, in a very real sense, that's my only function, is to expose and destroy every fear that you have. That's what discipleship is. Now, a lot of you are still in the position where you have all of the common fears and alliances of the Gentile world. And don't worry about it. You just started in the process. I mean, some of you have been here a long time, but in the spirit, in many ways, we're still in kindergarten compared to what's set before us. But I want you to sense and to never again excuse fear. Yeah. Not fear of the unknown, not fear of your future, not fear of...
fear nothing, period.
Yeah. But that can only come about when you have been tested in every arena. And my job is to test you.
So life is like a maze of tests, of fear and whatever.
Yeah, so that you're fully tested. Now, but here, the difference between here and the world is, in the world, it encourages alliances and encourages systems of thought. It encourages isms so that you are communally protected against fear. Part of that is simply things like music, television, radio. You got to go? Okay.
See you, Tony.
Bye, Tony. I mean, all of those things, drama, movies, all of those things provide you an escape mechanism by which you do not have to face the emptiness of your own soul. You understand? Now, those are the simple things. All of those are idolatries that are the wood, hay, and stubble that we talked about the other night. And those are the little idols that you create to escape the aloneness or the emptiness of your soul. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. I want to get, because those will be destroyed just by observation. But I want to get to the root. And the root is the lingering fear that you're not doing it right. The lingering fear that you're missing something. And your endless search to try to resolve that basic issue. I don't care about little words now or little explanations. I want to get to the core of your very existence. And all of the things that you do that reveal to me and to the Father that you are still walking in fear of someone other than or something other than the Father. Understand? So tonight we're going to talk about fear. Fear, I've talked to you all about this before, but I want you to try to understand what it is. Fear causes you to put a want or a name on your desire. Well, let me back up. The promise of God is, delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart. Understand that? That's a promise. That's a surety. The problem is, do any of you know what the desire of your heart is? For most of you, for you in particular, since this is brought up, You have a particular desire, but your fear has caused you to place Barbara's name on it. Because you're afraid that some imagined moment in time cannot be duplicated without that name. Now the desire is pure. The fear is bullshit. Understand? And so therefore, your, not you in particular, or you alone, but all of us, what you do with a desire is, you turn, because of fear, it's the desire coupled with fear creates another garnishment or a thing on your idol. Now, God in one iota concerned about satisfying your idolatry. He's not one iota concerned about satisfying your fears. He's concerned with you seeing the stupidity of your idols and the unnecessity of your fear. The singular lie is you're away from the source. Am I communicating? So you have snatches in time, so to speak.
Well, that's sort of what I'm trying to say.
Forget about all that other stuff.
You have a little snatch in time, and your mind takes that and says, I am afraid that I will never be able to return to that point without Y.
That's right.
I'll never return to X without Y. Well, the problem is that your mind doesn't have the capacity to remember pain. It's part of the text. You can remember uncomfortableness or, but you can't really remember pain, even emotional pain. You can't remember physical pain, but you cannot remember emotional pain. And you're designed that way. And the reason is so that God tricks you. And you come along and you have this great moment in time experience. And your mind remembers that because of the hormone epinephrine, which you've talked about. It locks it in time.
Etches it into your mind.
It etches it. And you don't have the capacity to remember the bullshit connected with it.
Yeah.
So what happens? God has tricked, what God has done, he's tricked the Antichrist again.
Awesome. I believe that.
You understand?
Yeah. This is not a pun. I'm smiling even before I say it. I had a taste of what I want. I mean, I'd like to have the rest of the meal.
That's right.
Oh, man.
Now, that's even true, especially, it's much even more so true in terms of the moment now, in terms of people that are here that are married. If you're in any position hoping to return to a hope, you know, it's a hopeless longing to return to some past imagined position, then you have become an enemy of God. What God has set before you is the fullness of joy. Joy unspeakable between you and your spouse. But it's not, it's ever and always increasing in intensity. But if you have covered God by locking a point in your mind, then that has become your covering or your idol, and the Spirit of God has no access. He'll never violate your will.
I just saw something in my experience. I've been married twice. I thought, the first time I got married, I thought I was madly in love with that woman, and I thought I knew what love was, and I thought I had experienced the height of all kinds of feelings. And then along came the second one. And I looked back and I said, I didn't know what love was. I didn't know what pleasure was. I didn't know any of these things. So my experience says that there was something I thought was the ultimate that was superseded. I'm still looking backward thinking this is the other.
But my experience says it's very possible.
Well, I mean, it's a guarantee. Now, you understand those connections between fear and desire, and how fear causes you to put a label or a identity on your desire.
Amen.
That the point is that your individualized relationship is with God. And when it isn't, then you are placing something else between you and the Father. Now, in many kind, for many of you, that's been me. Well, that's really dumb, but it's understandable. The milk of the Word, by definition, has to come from another source. And so as long as your understanding of the Word or of the mystery of life is from me, then you are consuming the milk of the Word.
Right.
It's been pre-digested for you. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, God doesn't want that. I mean, he understands, just like a little baby, he lives on milk for a while, but there comes a point in time in which there is a there's a weaning, so that your meat of the Word, your food from the Father, I mean, if your food comes directly from the Father and not from an intermediary. And that is another, but it's a natural process. It's what takes place. I mean, it's not something to be begrudged. I mean, you know, H.L. Hunt was breastfed until he was 8. H.L. Hunt. Billionaire, yeah. But I mean, some societies there, you know, Harry's always trying to be, he's still trying to get breastfed. But. Okay. But I want us to identify and to understand that fear is something that can't be covered over any longer. And fear is the evidence of the ultimate sin. Fear is the evidence of unbelief. And so the real root of the fear is, I don't believe in God.
So that's the basis of all fear.
Yeah.
No matter what it is.
And God, but you may not put God's name on it. I mean, I don't believe that I'm with the source of life. I believe that I'm separate from the source, and therefore I have to do stuff. I mean, that's the motivation for the entire world. That's the that's the fuel that runs the engine of the world. It's all a deception. It's the fuel that runs the engine of the Babylon. They've got to go out and save the world. Well, they're not trying to save the world, they're trying to save themselves. They're trying to prove their own false theology by the act of getting adherence to it. Because it must be true if I can get this many people.
I guess that's why I used to try to drag people in.
Yeah. You try to prove it to yourself and to your friends, and the evidence of it is how many people follow you, or how many people are, you know. Well, that's, in the spirit, the evidence is how few follow.
Amen.
Well, I want to show you a secret. You like secrets? Hidden mystery secrets?
We had a weird day.
Well, let's look at hidden mystery. Go to get a Bible.
Weird.
Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12.
Spiritual secret.
Mystery of the universe.
Mystery of the universe. Here.
Right here.
Everything you ever wanted to know. This book. I'm doing today.
Everything you wanted to know right about God.
And right here. And shelf instructions. This is it. We'll probably never have to meet again after this.
Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, right.
Everybody's head will
be like, give us a minute.
Does everybody have Ecclesiastes? Yeah.
Verse 9. And moreover, you know why I like this, because of the first sentence. And moreover, the preacher was wise.
That preacher.
Well,
why?
So pleased
with himself.
Oh, okay, check
it out. He's taking
still the ball and running with it. Even though he was much increased in years.
You're enjoying this much.
And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed and sought out and let in order many proverbs.
Set in order.
Set.
Why? Well, need a glass of those,
yeah, right. Tell me, do I need a witness?
Contact lenses.
What does it say? It's a misprint, right? It says let.
He gave good what?
I think you need to start with verse 8.
Vanity, vanity, saith the preacher. All is vanity. Verse 10, the preacher sought to find out acceptable words. And that's what I've always done. Mm-hmm. And that which was written was upright, even words of truth. And obviously, he's talking about Solomon, so I'm just being... The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd.
What are goads? And carpentry.
Huh?
Goads.
Goads are like... something to fasten with.
Okay. And nails, yeah. By carpenters or by the masters, right? Carpenters.
Yeah. Okay. And further, by these, my son, be admonished. By making many books, there is no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh. Now, I can testify to that.
So far, you're not looking real good at this.
Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Now, in the construction of that sentence, when the English, we hear it, we say, fear God and keep His commandments. Two separate clauses. In the Hebrew it says, fear God, you will keep His commandments.
Fear God, which is keeping His commandments.
Fear God, which is keeping His commandments. Fear God, which is the end of the law. You understand? It's like the famous one, where it says, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. Well, again, the right translation says, abandon yourself. Don't even think of yourself at all. Pick up your cross means a mental acceptance of the death penalty, and you will follow Him automatically. In other words, there's no more. There's nothing to do but abandon yourself by the act of accepting your death. Then you will follow Him. You understand? So here, fear God by that vehicle, you will keep His commandments. That's the whole conclusion of the matter. Okay, now I better find out what fearing God means. It means, in the first place, in the Hebrew it says, the construction provides an interesting position. It says, fear only God. And thereby you keep His whole command, or all the commandments. And thereby, it's the conclusion of the whole matter. For God shall bring every work into judgment, with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Now the problem with this secret shit, this hidden stuff, is that when you hide, that's why we commend ourselves openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God. That's because, why? Because we've been bought with a price. We're not our own. Why? Therefore, nothing that we have is us. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God. That's not an option, that's a final activity. I cannot live by anything else other than the faith of the Son of God. I cannot deny Him, for He cannot deny Himself. I have no independent self, therefore whatsoever I think, whatsoever I feel, whatsoever I am, is Him. That's the meaning of fearing God, the final end. You understand? And you never once let the lying Antichrist take you into a position of believing you are separate from. Then you can abandon yourself. Then you can see and experience and know joy unspeakable. I am crucified with Christ. Not I wish I were, or maybe if I'm good enough, or someday if I'm spiritual, or someday it might happen. In eternal fact, I am crucified with Christ, and the scriptures declare that that was an eternal fact from before the foundation of the world. Doesn't matter whether I understand it or not. Doesn't matter whether I accept it or not. I am crucified with Christ. What does crucified mean? It means dead. Eternally, the Antichrist has always been dead. The lie of separation has always been a flimsy lie. Its power is based on these secret fears. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Something's going on. What the hell is it? Yet not I that liveth, but Christ who liveth in me. That's Christ who liveth in me if I do it right. Or Christ that liveth in me if I do this or this or this or this. No, it's Christ that liveth in me, period, eternally, from before the foundation of the world. That's why you were chosen in him from before the foundation of the world. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Not I that liveth, but Christ that liveth in me. Not one option. And the life I now live in this flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God. You can't make a mistake. You can do nothing against the truth. There can be no fear, because perfected love, tested, has cast out all fear the moment you know who you are. It'll be tested. Think it not strange concerning the fiery trial that's going to come upon you, as though some strange thing had happened to you, like every one of you do. Every time some little crap happens, oh my God, I'm the only one in the world that's ever happened to. Again, the lie of separation. It's not even happening to you. Oh, I'm so afraid. Who are you? Are you a lie? You're either the lie or the truth. You've gone long enough to know you're not the lie. Communicating?
Something has happened.
I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Not I that liveth, but Christ who liveth in me. The life I now live in this flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He's not talking about the Antichrist. He's talking about the bride.
I don't know what this feeling is. It's like, it's not some kind of weird disassociation, because, I mean, you still feel things. And
it's him feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling, and I can't really claim it anymore as my own.
It's his.
It's like you're right on the edge of just laughing at everything that you get freaked out by. You get mad, And just, if there was somebody there all the time, like watching your feelings on a screen, they'd like hit the canned laughter or something.
Oh, yeah. Because the essence of all of the lie is that you take yourself seriously. Now let's go to Psalm 111. We'll start in verse 5. He hath given meat or food unto them that fear him. He will ever be mindful of his covenant. Remember, the covenant is singular. There's only one covenant ever been made. What we call the Old Testament or the Old Covenant was just a picture of the one covenant. You understand that? He will ever be mindful of his covenant. So anytime to be in the flow, to be in the mystery, you simply have to remind God, and as you remind God, you're reminding yourself of his covenant.
You just said there was only one.
Which is.
Right?
Yeah.
How come you always hear there's
two covenants?
Yeah,
two. Old and New Testament. The Old Covenant, which is the law, and all of the various... The law, it starts out with the one singular thing of don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Then it goes the Noahic law, which is the trying of, you know, just the rules of man. And then it goes up to the Ten Commandments, and then it goes up to the 613 laws of Moses. But they're all just different aspects or pictures of the one covenant. You understand that? Okay. So you that's what prayer is, that's what life is about. Prayer is simply reminding God, which in truth you're reminding yourself of the one covenant, so that you move from a position of swimming upstream or trying to move to moving in the flow. So, and in the flow you're at rest. The whole world, in fact, modern psychology is now talking about being in the flow. You know, the moments in time when you're in inspiration, or when a professional athlete is doing things automatically, and or when you're in a position of writing, or that abandonment, you're in the flow. Well, that's the picture of the one covenant.
Wow. It's like, I don't know if it was a dream or if it was just an analogy that was really blinged into my mind. It was like going down a river, only with tall sides you can have it. And I was just thought, you know, the way I was doing was just kind of trying to go from rock to rock, but struggling along the way to go downstream instead of just getting out into the current and just being...
Yeah, it's the analogy I've used before with regard to is that the whole human race is swimming. And ever and always the raft is right next to you. And all you have to do is hop on the raft.
It's too simple.
That's what the fear of the Lord is. And you hop on the raft by the recognition, internalizing, that I'm crucified with Christ. And then there's only one life. There's only one thought. You're always speaking as the oracles of God, because your life is hidden with Christ in the heavenlies. And God always speaks between the wings of the cherubim on the mercy seat. That's what's called that point in the ark. On the ark, in the Holy of Holies, is called the oracle. And you speak as the oracles of God. You don't judge for yourself good and evil. It's the simplest of simplicity. You always know you're speaking as unto the Father. You're always, whatever you're doing is as unto the Father, because you're on that ark. There's nothing hidden. There's no secret you. There's no you judging you any longer. It's not in your business. That's the risk of faith. It's so simple. And all that I try to do, and everything that I've done with any of you for as long as I've known you, is to try to cause you to see that one grand, simple mystery. All right. So he's giving food to them that fear him. All right. Verse 6, he hath showed his people the power of his works, that he may give them the heritage of the heathen. In other words, all things are yours. I mean, you're why time and space were created. I mean, that's not something, that's not someday, that's now. The works of his hands are verity, or truth, and judgment. All his commandments are sure. They stand fast forever and ever, and are done in truth and uprightness. Now, that command, that mystery, that keeping of that command is simply the recognition that happens automatically in the fear of God. You fear, but again, it's fear only Him. Now, you'll fail, you'll run around and a snake will come on you, oh shit. But that's the purpose. The purpose of that snake, or the purpose of that idol, or the purpose of anything that has taken place in your life is to tempt that one truth. Now, tempt doesn't mean to cause you, to entice you to do evil. That's not what the word tempt means. It means that you have been put to the test for the purposes of approving. And you cannot fail the test, because he didn't fail the test. And he's your life. I live by the faith of the Son of God. The battlefield is always here. You always externalize it. That's another trick of the Antichrist. Externalizing it causes it to be separate. So simple.
I'm trying to understand the fear, because I have a fear that God's not going to be there, or that God's going to do something to me, but that's not what the fear of God is.
That's not the fear of God is, no. There's two ways you know about the fear of God. The first way you know about the fear of God is as a Gentile, or as a little child, or as an adolescent. There's only one commonality to that fear, and that's a fear that says, oh shit, what if I'm doing it wrong? What if I don't have this down right? What if? It's a what if kind of fear. And then it says, our God is a consuming fire, and you know, all that kind of stuff. The other fear is once you've tasted that the Lord is good, and you taste it by your sensory perception, by the experience of all senses, in that tasting of it, which all of you have experienced at least a moment of, once you've tasted that, then the fear of God is the other side of the coin. It's, I can never, ever, ever be separate from that certainty again. You see that?
Yeah, I understand. Because, you know, whenever y'all talk about the fear of God, I go back to one time where I was really fearful, and I think I've talked about this before, where I had a vision, and this was before I went into Bible study or anything, and I don't know if I was dreaming or having visions of all these demons dancing in my room, and I just got so scared, and I prayed about it. And it was the first time I really felt I was praying, and in my prayer I was saying, I know I'm not praying to you, please forgive me for not praying to you. You know, but, and that was fear that he wasn't going to be there.
Right.
But,
and that's and God uses all those. I mean, he causes all those things that are the other side of the fear of God, the negative side, to drive you to him.
So the fear is fear of being separate.
Right. For us now that we've tasted and know that the Lord is gracious, the Lord is good, the Lord is light, the Lord is truth, the Lord is the fulfillment of all my desires. For us then, the fear of God is not allowing the lie of separation ever to be manifest for a moment. I mean, it will be because you're supposed to be tested by it. But the distance between how long you live in that lie and how long you return from it is the mark of where you are in the, whether you're in the world or in the wilderness or enter the promise or entering, living in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always tested, constantly.
I wonder about that.
But the distance between my, I mean, normally it's just, I mean, I instantly see, because I know the fear of God. I'll do nothing, I'll allow nothing to keep me from that certainty. And it's the same way about things, and the best way we have it is the greatest feeling of love that you've ever experienced for another person. And that total feeling of, you know, it's not being sexual, but it's a merging, a oneness. It's a melting kind of feeling where you just overflowed. Well, then it's the certainty that you want nothing to separate you from that feeling.
Amen.
Well, that's the picture we have on earth of that which is true eternally. And that's why there's male and female. Okay? Wait. Now, the promise then, again, this is when Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. We always hear that is that someday he's going to give me the way, or show me the way. Someday he's going to give me life. Someday he's going to teach me truth. He's never going to do that. The Antichrist will always promise that he's going to someday give you this, and someday give you that, and someday this will happen, and someday you'll be raptured, and someday this will happen. That's, again, it just foisters or it fosters the lie of separation. That's what all Babylon does in religion. It encourages... It, by teaching you how to get to God, or how to get something from God, the very act, the predicate of it is that you're separate.
Yeah.
So that's the definition, another definition of Babylon, or the whore of Babylon. Because again, as a whore, the whore demands some kind of payment. Mm-hmm. And so as the whore of Babylon, she demands you to do something in order to get accepted. Well, God says, I've given you all things freely now. The lie of the mind, who is always joined to the whore, because it's the Antichrist instead of Christ, always demands you to do something. The God of this world, he's in every arena. The God of eternity, the Father of spirits that we fear and live, demands nothing.
Yeah. Was that saying about he's a fool to think that he can give away something he's never had? Or...
Right. He is no fool who loses that which he never owned.
Yeah, I mean, that's
to strange. Gain that which he can never lose. I mean, when I say to you it cost you your life, what the fuck is your life anyway? You know, your life has been a joke. A running, whatever this thing is, Saturday Night Live, of errors, of mistakes, of fear, of separation. And God says, my own right arm now has gotten me the victory. And that victory is internalized within all of you, and all you have to do is accept it. Never again to believe the lie of someday. It's always the lie of tomorrow. That's why Jesus said, give no thought for tomorrow. It's always the lie that someday something will take place. The fact is, from God's standpoint, if you are in that moment of fear and you speak something and you know that He hears you because of that intimacy, then you have whatever you've spoken even as the moment you ask it, because you've literally called it into existence. That's your heritage. Understand? I mean, we're not talking a little religious shit here. We're talking life. Right. All the works of His hand are verity and judgment. All His commandments are sure. That because it's not, we're not talking about little things now. We're talking about a person. And that person is resident, is the real you. They stand fast forever and ever. I mean, nothing ever time dependent. That's what it means when it says they stand fast, they're sure, forever and ever. That means they haven't changed. They're not dependent on your performance. They're not dependent on time. They're not dependent on anything. Save His covenant, which He has made and given you freely. They stand fast forever and ever and are done in truth and uprightness, because He is truth and uprightness. You never have to worry about establishing your own worth ever again or about being right ever again. Who cares? You know, that's why we've talked in the past about if we ever get a forum and somebody accuses me of anything, of course I'm guilty. But who cares? You know, there's nothing you could say to me that I'm not guilty of.
Wow. It's like people, I don't know why, but they would demand some kind of righteousness from you other than the righteousness of Christ.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they would say, it's like,
what are your credentials? What are my credentials? I have none.
Yeah. Because they don't see that God gives you the righteousness, and it's the righteousness. It's like a garment. It's put on. It's not something you walk in with.
Right, it's the power of the universe. I mean, it probably was like 5 minutes after I became a believer, after I came back into an awareness of surroundings, I wrote down. I had the little dealy, and I wrote down that one man fully yielded to the Spirit of God is the most powerful force in the universe. Nothing can stand against it. I mean, I've never stopped knowing that. I mean, no matter how weird this sounds to you, I know that I'm the most powerful force in the universe. Because I know that my God and I are one. And it doesn't matter whether I sleep on floors or... Who cares? Those are stupid little things. Or have money or not money. Those are only instruments that God is using to form that which He ultimately desires. And what He ultimately desires is a body. That's why the evidence of the body is unfeigned love. Unfeigned means not one thing ever acted. And I can say with everything in me that and you all know it, that there is nothing in the universe I wouldn't do for you. You know, but guys like people that have left, they can't accept
I mean, they have to satisfy the demands that they have to feed their own idolatry, rather than seeing the end of that idolatry and accept it. And I'm not saying they're out, I'm just saying God has to deal with them. They are literally delivered over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. That's not a negative thing.
Can't get out of the river, though.
They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have no doubt continued with us. You rest. I believe, therefore I speak. I mean, I don't ever have to work it up. Love doesn't have to work it up.
You're slow.
No, I'm not slow. I was trying to.
They stand fast forever and ever. Nothing can interrupt it. No interrupters. And are done in truth and righteousness, no matter what it looks like, by some stupid sperm cell's definition of truth and righteousness. I don't care what anybody defines as rightness or truth. That's why I hate Pharisees, because they're blaspheming in the name of my Father throughout the world. Again, the mystery of life. And this is true. Don't piss off the rabbi. But that's equally true for you as a rabbi in truth. I mean, you want to see the world explode? I mean, we have 20 of us that are fully...
And then piss us off.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, we're dealing with, I mean, we all power in heaven and earth is right here.
Well, I almost don't want to believe that, because I think I would have, at every juncture, I would have used that.
Well, but that's so would every other child. You don't have to worry about it. Your dad's going to not give you the keys until it's time to drive.
Say,
but it doesn't make you not a child of the Father because he doesn't give you the keys. It makes you one that's waiting expectantly, knowing certainly what's happening, what's about to take place, and expecting that inheritance to be manifest in you at any moment. This going from the adolescent to the child to the young man to the Father isn't a function of the passage of time. It can occur in an instant as soon as your idolatry is destroyed.
I told you Monday night I watched that show on Isaac Singer, the Jewish writer. In one little section he was talking about he was growing up in the ghetto in Warsaw. They lived on some particular street where thousands and thousands of Jews lived. And he said that at that point, at that place in time and space, and that point in time was when he knew that where he was and where the people of his synagogue were was the center of the universe.
Right, man.
Wow.
Well, but I've always said we are the center of the universe. Who cares about the little piss ants? You hear me? I mean, we'll pull them out of the fire as it comes into our being, but it's not our function to go save piss ants. All they are is little irritants to the mystery. Okay, I'll watch.
Wait, we talked about this before, but you know the thing about Molech, Melech, and just one vowel point makes all the difference in the world. There's one vowel point difference between the Hebrew word that means sons of Jacob and the Hebrew word that means sons of Bel. Mm-hmm. One vowel. And they're stinging little flies. The sons of Bel, Belzebub, are stinging little flitting little sand fleas.
Yeah. Okay. They stand fast forever and ever, are done in truth and uprightness. He sent redemption unto his people. He hath commanded his covenant forever. You think your mind is stronger than... Are you stronger than God? I mean, if I believed my mind, you wouldn't be here. Do you understand that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I gave attention to the way I felt with regard to whether or not that had to do with God or not, you wouldn't be here. Now watch. He sent redemption unto his people. He hath commanded his covenant forever. Holy and reverend is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now wisdom in the Hebrew is a feminine word. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of the bride. Wisdom in the Proverbs is always she. That's in Greek. Wisdom is justified of her children, not of some ridiculous arguments or, you know, as you heard me say before, the weakness of apologetics is apology. You know, there's a whole, you know, they teach apologetics in seminary. Yeah. How do you justify your faith? Well, you dumb. I mean, God. Can you imagine me teaching you how to justify your faith to some pissant? I don't care if he has 15 doctorates. Can you imagine, I mean, forget me and excuse me for speaking stupidly, but can you imagine me being afraid of some man? And it has nothing to do with me. Trying to justify this, prove God by my words. I'm not going to prove God. I'm going to prove your stupidity. The only Christian doctrine that's empirically verifiable, the only part of any of this that can be proven by sensory perception, is your fallenness. Everything else is faith, because it's his resurrection.
Wow, you're saying some wild shit tonight.
Well, is it true? All right. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do. And then notice, his commandments is in italics.
Well, what is that italic?
Huh?
Why?
Because it isn't in the text. It was placed there by the translators to improve your understanding.
But what is it really?
A good understanding have all they that do fear the Lord, is what it's referring to.
Oh.
That do.
That do.
So they just thought.
His praise endureth forever. Now watch. For you see your calling, brethren. Now there are not many wise men.
Amen.
Not many noble.
Amen.
Not many mighty. Are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise.
Yeah. Why is that? Is it because...
Well, listen. I'll tell you right here. God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world.
Louis or Daryl?
Louis. Both. The base twins. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised hath God chosen. Yea, and things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are. That no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him, are you in Christ. It's not only Christ in you, but you're in him. You're all in an all. But of him are you in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. It's already finished. It's a fait accompli. One more quick one. For all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of many redound to the glory of God. And for which cause, in this case, I faint not. But though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. And for our light affliction, you, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more an exceeding weight, eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen, eternal. Now, how do you look at something's not seen? Well, you see through everything. You know, do you judge somebody? See through that judgment to see that it's just God's way of showing you that you haven't accepted the blood yet. You're still condemning yourself. It has nothing to do with the other person. It's God's showing you that you haven't fully apprehended the blood. So pray for, don't pray for anything to do with the other person. That's nothing, has nothing to do with it. Pray for the blood. You think there's a need in your life? Don't pray for the need. See through it, that you might see who you are. You understand? Well, this is Fear of God 101. Take it big, guy.